We are back. It's your girl Shuli and it's Speak It Thursday. You know what time it is. As you come in, take your virtual seat, drop your city, let us know where you're chiming in from. We have some things to talk about. It is back to school and definitely not back to school as we know it. We still have this COVID, or as some people say, the COVID is still out there. And actually, I was listening to Anderson Cooper, and he was saying that the numbers have increased since July in our children, more than 90% from July until where we are right now. Kids are going back to school. I saw this report of a nurse, Amy, in Georgia, who, honey, she quit her job. She quit the whole job because she said she did not want to put children at risk. So much is going on. And tonight, our guest is an educator. We have Ms. Bridget R. Wilkins, and she has 15 years of experience. She is a business communications educator, and she came from the business and nonprofit sector. And she came to help the kids, but in the midst of helping the kids and doing all the great work that she's doing, we have some things going on, and she's very vocal and she's out there on the ground, and we need to know how things are going. So with that said, we're going to bring our guest on. Welcome.
Thanks.
How you doing?
I'm making it. That's all I got.
Look, and let's say this, people, she's Gram fam, so I'm going to try to keep it calm because I tend to clown when the Gram fam steps in the building. But Bridget is, again, she's Gram fam, but more importantly, she is an educator. And in this conversation, I hope to dissect, and we're going to help process the feelings of the teachers, to give some insight to the parents, to see how the parents can help the educators, and how can we all keep each other safe in this. All right, Bridget, we are going to jump in. First question, just to give some background to the people, you came from the business and nonprofit sector. Why redirect your path to education in the first place?
So initially, I got into education teaching at online for community college because I was trying to figure out if I wanted to go and get my PhD and actually be a college professor. And I was at an event for that the nonprofit I was working at was holding, and a woman who was there sitting next to me actually was a PhD, and she taught at University of North Carolina. And she said, "Honey, you have an MBA. You know you can teach on a community college level." I said, "No, ma'am, I didn't know that." She said, "Yes." She said, "My suggestion would be try that. And if you like it, then determine if you want to get your PhD. But if you like it and you don't mind staying on a community college level, just stay there and you're done." I was like, "Oh, okay." So that's how I got into it from a collegiate side. And then as I was teaching college students, I started discovering that they didn't have a lot of critical thinking skills. And so I always thought if I end up, hey, mama, if I ended up leaving corporate or if something happened or something like that, I wanted to know what I could do on a high school environment to see if I could be of some benefit there, to cut off the fact that you don't have critical thinking skills right now and see if I could circumvent that so that you're better. I think that's probably the heart of any educator, is to see what can I do to make an impact. So I took 2016. I went through alternative certification, landed my first job in January 2017. I was not at any risk of losing my job that I had. I was operations director for a local test prep company for the Princeton Review. I was good. No one was trying to fire me, but it was a choice that I made. And so there I was in high school.
And you're still there.
I'm still there.
So you're there, you're in high school, and now fast forward, last spring, though, you went on spring break and you never returned from spring break. Tell us what that was like.
The last thing I said to my kids that Friday, right before spring break, was come back as you are. I want you safe and healthy. Enjoy your time. We're going to get to work. And that was it. And then we went to Dallas for a spring break from celebrate my mom's birthday. Came back. Well, while we were there, the hotel had started shutting down. And we were like, what? I mean, I heard about COVID, but what is really happening? It was like we watched the city shut down. Technically, the state shut down like right before our eyes. And we come back home. Emails are all over the place from my AP, who is my supervisor, texting, and everybody's like, what are we supposed to do? And then there was a long pause. We literally sat like, what are we supposed to do with these children? And they were like, oh, we're going to do some training. On what? What is it you want us to do? And then that became a panic. So at the same time, I'm panicking because now we're in something new. But not only am I panicking with high school, I'm panicking with college because they have the same thing that's happening. So the good thing about my collegiates is that I was already teaching asynchronously online. So the truth is that my college students didn't have to pivot for my class, but they did still have to pivot because some had a face-to-face class.
Okay. What is that like real quick? Asynchronously online. I had to pace myself for those people who are not really up on that.
So asynchronous is more like self-paced, meaning what you will see in those courses are really instructors communicating via video. They should be giving you a welcome message. They should be providing you with verbal instruction via video. But the good thing is that there are just some people who learn better self-paced. You still have deadlines. You still have all of that. But you get to technically kind of go at your own pace, or at least in my class, I let you go at your own pace. I open up everything at the beginning and then I'm available virtually for you to sign up for an appointment to meet with me if you have questions about anything. So that's asynchronous learning. Synchronous learning is what we're doing right here. You log in to what they call a learning management system. So it could be Blackboard. It could be Canvas, which is what we use in my high school. It could be Moodle. There are so many.
Okay.
You log in at a designated time and we learn together. So that's what synchronous means. Like we're doing it right in real time.
Okay. So you had some experience, but you weren't ready for all that came with it. So let's talk about you had to figure it out. You had parents not used to being that involved with their children's education. Mm-hmm. And of course, a lot of that responsibility was put on educators. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
What was the most challenging thing?
I think the most challenging thing was, one, for some teachers, adjusting their students to being in a particular learning management system all the time to get their information. But not only that, you had to teach not the teacher side. If you've never recorded video, you're in a panic. You don't know how to do that. No one told you how to do it. You don't know how to edit it. The most you know how to do, if you're depending on your demographic, is a selfie and maybe a voice call or something, but you don't know how to do it. And so here we are as teachers trying to deal with parents who are emailing us talking about, what are y'all doing at school? Because I don't have anything for my kid to do. And we're like, calm down. I don't know. And so everyone's in a panic. People are thinking that their kids are about to flunk and they're going to die and they're not going to learn anything. And the learning has been halted. So not only did I have to teach students, I had to teach parents. I had parents yelling at me, my kid doesn't know how to do this and blah, 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 blah. And I'm at home. So I don't have a phone where I can pick it up and call you, because as much as I love y'all, y'all ain't getting y'all need my cell phone number. And I always said, I can't get on Zoom, which we had to learn, or Teams, which we had to learn all at the same time and help y'all. And you could do that. So trying to set the parameter for a student to know that just because we have assignments online and you can get in there anytime you want to does not mean that I am available. So I had to click off my remind comments because they were sending me comments. Like, Miss B, how do I do this? Baby, it is 10:30 at night. Miss B has been so sleep. This is not going to be it. So trying to maneuver that and figure that part out and not panic, because the truth is that in all of this, even with going right now, I have to not panic. If I panic, your kid's going to panic. So I have to withhold my own anxiety so I can deal with your children face-to-face or offline. Because the truth is that what I discovered as being an educator, it is like being on your show all day long. You literally have to be on 10 all day. You don't get a chance to be tired or weary. Those kids are waiting for you. And if they say your class is boring, you might end up with somebody saying, oh, you don't need to be a teacher. Like crazy stuff like that. So we're dealing with all of that, trying to figure out how to make Canvas work, which is what we use at the high school. And then trying to figure out how to put assignments. And people are, and you got emails all over the place coming from my CTE department, which is at the main, which is not on my campus. Then the school principal with his expectations. Everybody had their own expectations to the point that I literally used to just go lay down on the couch.
I was about to say, just from you saying that, I'm tired. I'm done. And then the difference is before, because I know you are a traveler and you are bits and bytes and you're about town. You're about town and you had your outlets. The difference is you didn't have those outlets. So tell me what that was like in terms of your anxiety, for real. That, you said it, but like go a little deeper.
That blog stopped. I haven't written a blog at all year. It was just too much. And so every once in a while I will post something on my blog, but I mean on my Instagram, but that was about it. I learned to color. Like there would be days I literally would just sit and color in these coloring books and drink a Coke and not talk to anyone. And because I have anxiety already. And so I literally have to say to myself, you can't fix it. You can't fix it, because I think I can fix everything. You can't fix it. Stop. Sit down. And so the first part, I was exhausted March through April. And then May, I finally got the hang of it. And then it was kind of like clockwork. And so it seemed okay. And then it was like school was over. You know, but yeah, so the coloring, because at that time I started, everybody was free online. You could get Less Meals on Demand, which are my favorite classes at the YMCA. So I canceled my Y membership. I started doing that. And then that would make me so exhausted. And then I want to go to bed. And so a lot of times I find myself just waking up, going through the motions of teaching online asynchronously, because we really didn't have to do virtual. And then my mama snapped me out of it. And then we had a conversation and I started to try to find a silver lining. And for me, it was more so that these are things that are pushing me out of my comfort zone, that had COVID not happened, I wouldn't know how to do video. I wouldn't be able to be comfortable with my voice and how I look on camera and how I sound and all of these things that were stopping me from actually having a goal of actually going into instructional design. So I said, girl, this your chance. In the middle of this pandemic, you use all of this, because all of the words that I'm using, LMS, asynchronous, synchronous, and all of these things, video editing and all of that, are parts of instructional design. So what you gonna be mad about? That's how I got through that part of the summer. I was in any training you could throw at me. I trained all June between UHD, where I adjunct, and at the high school. I was in all kinds of training to the point I had trained myself to death. I was so tired.
You were taking advantage of all of those lessons yeah. and options that were available to
and
us.
Everything that was free.
Yes.
I got that free. I got it. So now I'm just dealing with the idea of, so when I got the message that we were going to have to go back into school, then I just stopped. I couldn't believe it. I really couldn't. Like, I was hopeful, but a part of me, knowing the district that I'm in and the area that I'm in, I was like, they going back to school. They going back to school. I watch. And Sure enough, there we are.
We are going back, and knowing that Texas has been pretty non-compliant in general with everything that's going on. So you've got, when did you get the final message that you were going back, or the final word? Because I remember we even had a show about it. We were talking about what that's going to be like when it came out. But yeah, when did you get that? Like, how much notice did you get
that we were going back? Mm-hmm. We found out in June after the first board meeting that it was official that we were going back. So we found out in June. And then it was, hold on. Stuff is starting to change in Texas. They're going to have an emergency meeting and we may push it back, or we don't know. But back when we got the first word, we had an option of, well, not when I say we, I don't mean teachers, but parents had an option of hybrid, face-to-face, or remote. So the survey went out. Most parents wanted hybrid. But then TEA, which is the Texas Education Association, who makes all the decisions for all Texas schools, said, we're not going to give y'all coins for for hybrid. You have to fully open up and offer remote. So that went away. And we never resurveyed the parents. So face-to-face was the second option. And so that's where we were. So when the numbers really started to increase, and they called an emergency board meeting, which was to decide if we were going to push back or what we were going to do. That was in July. I think that was at the end of July. So all of July, I have bought all kinds of PPE, except a hazmat suit. I should have bought it in May when I saw them for $9, but they were out. And I have 195 masks because I work 195 days. I got a one disposable mask for every day. And they said, well, we're going to push the date back. What you mean you're going to push the date back? What is that going to do? Well, they decided to push the date back. But in that 5-hour meeting, virtual meeting, that everybody associated with my district, parents, teachers, everyone was on that 5-hour virtual meeting, waiting to hear them say that. They had experts that literally were telling us that you have to, you know, if you social distance, and I thought to myself, you do realize they're not social distancing. So then we deal with what the CDC is saying, what everyone is trying to say. And then we look up and it becomes, well, what is my district going to do? You know, everybody else's district is fine. What is HISD going to do? What is Fort Bend going to do? What is Pearland going to do? Like, I need to know how it's going to impact me. And then, you know, you hear your friends in HISD go, yeah, girl, we ain't going back to September 8th. And I'm like, right. Yay, I'm waiting. And then I get my word and I was like, I got to go back. They were like, no, it's like I lost the lottery.
I was about to say, no. What were the first words that came out of your mouth? Can you say
WTF? WTF. Okay. And I don't trust you to provide what you say you're going to provide. Because your plan, my district's plan, was so vague that it left room for someone to assume something, which is what I don't like. But that's because I'm a communicator. Like, you're going to have to tell me the truth and tell me everything. And no one took into account teachers. The narrative around the country has never been teacher focused. Mm-hmm. Now we were warriors and soldiers, and y'all was trying to give us a daily parade and all kinds of stuff from March to May. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna treat my teacher like this. Baby, y'all want to burn us at the stake now. Tell us to get out. You're telling us to get out of teaching. Go retire. If you don't want to go to work, you're an essential worker. Lies. When did I become that?
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that real quick. Perfect segue. Before I do that, let's pop this on here. Rosalind Coleman said Dallas is still playing around and in limbo. Yep. And these experts. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so... Educator is now the new essential worker. True or false?
According to pay, no. But then essential workers' pay ain't too great either, depending on what end you're on. So I'm not going to say that. But what I would like for people to understand, because the truth is that we are just now, as schools open up, getting the voice of a teacher. We've been hearing parents, and we've been hearing medical people, and we've been hearing all these other people. No one really heard the voice of a teacher, because the truth is that no one cared. So I feel like people should be a little empathetic for an educator, because you have to understand that we did not go into an essential position. So when people go and work at, no, we don't get any essential pay as an educator. But when we go into, if you were to be a nurse, become a nurse or a police officer or any emergency person, you know, going into that field that you are essential. They can show you what it looks like. They can show you what your role looks like being essential. They can show you what the environment looks like to being essential. Then you get to make the choice if you want to do that. We did a hard pivot on teaching, and now we're essential. But no one told us that, because no one could tell us what that looked like. No one could tell us what the expectations of being essential are. Now, trust me, we knew we were halfway essential when we started doing active shooter trainings.
That, you know what? That is true.
Mm-hmm. However, what I want you to understand is that a teacher doesn't understand what it is to be essential, which is why the panic is where it is, which is why we're discussing it. However, even essential workers get real PPE. We're not getting that. Real essential workers get PPE. So if real essential, if we are truly real essential workers, run me an N95 mask. But you're
not.
What
are they giving you? I know you have your own, because
they're giving me what I got. They're giving me what I got already. And technically, they're really not giving us a supply. Like, we're getting, my understanding is that we're supposed to get hand sanitizer in the common areas. And
not,
then
not in your classroom.
No. And then we're supposed to get a disinfectant, which at this summer they told us not to bring our own because the district will be providing it. And my mama said, no, we're gonna go out and buy you some because we're not trusting it. My whole thing was, what's gonna happen if we run out? And so I went and stocked myself. I was like, I'll take your starter package. And then I'll carry it on out the rest of the year. And then to have
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And then we had these conversations where they're saying, like, if you want a face mask, we have some. But if you don't want one, please don't take one.
It's optional.
Face shields.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, let me say that. Face shields.
Okay.
Face masks are required. Face shields are an option. I'm going in with a face shield and a face mask. And if I can get Home Depot to cut me some plexiglass, I'm gonna bring my own. Because my safety is in my hands. It really is a Hunger Games situation. But I did want to add that I would hope that parents, and it, the same way you had to pivot to do your job at home, if that is what you're doing, please understand that teachers are, I mean, I know we look like we work miracles, but we can't work everything. We can't turn water into wine. So I need you to be empathetic with us on that. But also understand, in terms of that essential, that being an essential worker, mm-hmm. Look at it from this perspective. When it floods in Houston, you know, schools close, right? But firemen still have to go to work. Nurses still have to go to work. When there is a tornado, when it snows, when the buses can't get through, schools are closed. That means teachers mm-hmm. are at home and we're not teaching. Where does that make us essential?
Right. Because now Amy Taylor said, you are only essential when people do not want to care for their own children.
Now, listen, that is true in some instances. Mm-hmm. And I say that only because there are just some people, you know, they're not our generation. I'm Gen X. Gen X was a latchkey kid generation. We knew we had that key underneath that jacket right there. You get in that house, you lock that door, you eat that, you warm up that food that I left for you, and you call me and let me know you're at home. That was our generation. That's not this generation anymore. The only question I ask for those, for some of them, is what were you doing with them during the summers?
Camps.
Facts. Camps.
That's Let's be what honest.
Was. You were camp, doing camps.
And cheer camp, engineering camp, whatever camp, language camp, camp.
That's true. You know what? I didn't even think about that. But I just, I need you to understand that there's no winning this decision. Everybody's going to be angry. And some are going to, I mean, it's just, no one's going to get what they want. However, as a teacher, I want you to at least make me believe you care about me. As anyone would do in any for-profit or nonprofit or corporation that you go to work for, one thing you always want to do is try to get an answer if you don't have one. Mm-hmm. Two, make everybody feel like they are important, not necessary so you can reach your reach your goal. Because right now, this narrative in the whole country, which is why all the teachers in other states outside of Texas are protesting, because they got real unions. We have no unions. Texas is a non-unionized, is not a union state. So as much as these organizations go around saying that they are unions, they're not. They're organizations. And they primarily spend that money for policy. To go and advocate for policy. And I get that part, but you ain't got no rights with them. They cannot. And so we will not strike in Texas unless you want your TSR taken, your retirement taken.
They wow. Snap. Wow. Okay. So I'm learning some things that I did not know that, like you said, about the whole union. So is it actually like a coercion? Like, y'all are going back to school. We're going to take your money. First, you're not doing hybrid. And teachers, sorry, y'all got to go. You're essential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there's no empathy for a teacher, even from an administrator who at one point was in a classroom. And we're not social distancing. So you're telling me I have to, we're wearing masks because we can't social distance. So our school is doing a phase in, meaning that on the first day of school, I will see my students whose last names are A through L. That's it. Then those students will be online, will be remote the rest of the week. Okay. And so it will go that way for the first 2 weeks, that I'll have a different alpha every day. And we'll do that for 2 weeks. And then the next 2 weeks, we do 50%. That by the time September rolls around, all the kids who were coming face-to-face will be in school.
Okay. And so we're talking about expectation versus the reality. So that's what the expectation is. What do you think the reality is of that? Like being able to happen successfully?
I don't. And you know, as much as I like, and it's funny because then we get into a conversation with teachers about middle school and elementary kids versus high school kids. And listen, I went to a 16-year-old's parade for her birthday. And in May, and we met at the school so we could line up. Her friends jumped out of those cars so quick with no mask on, hugging, because they hadn't seen each other since March. They jumped out hugging and kissing and stuff. And in my car, I literally said, this is why we can't go back to school, because they're just doing, I don't want to punish you for being a child. That's just what you do. However, I need everybody to accept that we have a different normal. And my whole thing is no one wants to change. And so you're forcing us to be normal in an abnormal situation.
Correct.
So what am I supposed to do? So I don't think, so will those kids come back and wear a mask? My juniors and seniors will, because they have to have a job to be in my class. So they're wearing masks at work. They're used to it. They'll be fine with wearing a mask in the classroom. My ninth graders, I don't know. Because if no one is making them wear a mask at home to practice, I'm not trying to hear like, I gotta take it off. I gotta take mine off too. Deal with it. And so now I have to be the role model for your student, which means that who's going to be right in that situation? Who are you going to blame when your kid, if your kid contracts COVID? That's what I want to know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then who is the district going to blame if your kid catches COVID? And if I end up with COVID, you will say I gave it to your kid, not that your kid gave it to me. Those are the fears that I have.
Okay, good. That's what I was getting ready to get into. I was like, let's spend this half talking about, again, still on that conversation about expectations and realities, what that looks like. And before we do that, let's, Rosalind Coleman has another comment. She says, Dallas has advised they will provide 3 gallons of sanitizer. That was going to be my question for you, mm-hmm. like the quantity. 3 gallons of sanitizer, 3 masks, 1 face shield, and 1 Clorox wipes and Lysol per class. This is what we all hope they stick to.
These are facts, Rosalind. Dallas did way better than my district because, baby, they haven't told us how much of nothing we're getting. The only thing they told us that we're getting for sure is 1 face shield and 1, if we want it, and a face mask. That's it. And I mean, they've said we're going to get the sanitizer, but now they're having these conversations because, again, some districts, the money that was supposed to come from the CARES Act, a lot of those schools haven't gotten. That money's still sitting with TEA. They have not distributed and sent it down. So some districts made expenditures expecting reimbursement that they didn't get. So in districts that were already broke before this happened and looking at ways of slimming down their budgets are now having to spend their money to go out and buy hand sanitizer. My principal said, I had to send people out to go find hand sanitizer. I had to send people out to go and buy PPE. So when I started hearing stuff like that, that's why I was like, nope, I got all my own stuff. Everyone's not able to do that. But I also have great friends who have gifted me a whole lot of sanitizer. When they say, what you need? I need paper towels. I need spray bottles. I need any Clorox wipe you can find, because I am in a classroom. Oh, one of the expectations they have of us is that we are to be able to sanitize in 6 minutes because the kids will be shifting classes and I'm supposed to sanitize in 6 minutes. I am in a computer lab. So I'm expected to sanitize 25 keyboards, mice, desk, and screens. Get your life.
And how, here's what's about, how long?
6 minutes, because I have to let the other kids come in. Now, who, and then I'm supposed to be helping push kids along in the hallway so they don't stand in social distance, you know, and not stand and congregate. Get your life. Something's going to give. And something's going to give. And I'm exhausted. I have to do all of that, and I haven't even taught.
So your hall monitor, essential worker, teacher, housekeeper, mm-hmm. and what else? And not lightweight counselor.
These are facts.
What else?
And I mean, because FYI, for any parent out there who doesn't quite understand the relationship between your children and their teachers, you better find out who their favorite teacher is. They got the T on everything going on with your child. Because the truth is, I have to listen before I can get them to do any work. I got to show them that. And that's my fear for those students that may be remote, is that I don't get to make that connection. It's a fear that a lot of us have as educators. And I also want to emphasize, the truth is that the heart of a true educator would rather be in the classroom, but they don't want to die for it. But you want me to be the sacrificial lamb for your child to learn. So when all the teachers die, who gonna teach them?
Say that. I'm stopping. Say that again for the people in the back, please.
I just want to know where it was that I signed up to be a sacrificial lamb for your child to learn. I didn't. I really didn't. But you know what? Essential workers did. Because if your child gets sick, they are there taking care of COVID patients all day, every day, with the risk knowing that they could catch it. But they also knew that going into their career, that if something like this ever happened, they, you know, you got to go to work. An educator did not know that.
Like you said earlier, they had a choice.
They had a choice. We didn't. We were just dumped in like this. And it's just like, you're essential workers. So as of right now, all of your students, whether they're going virtual or going face-to-face, I really need you to cut them some slack, your teachers. Because the truth is that, yes, it sounds like we have all of this technology and all of this software and stuff like this to use to be able to teach them. But understand what it's like the first time you tried to log into a computer. Or it was like the first time you learned Microsoft Word or Excel or learn how to email or learn how to use your phone.
Still learning how to use the phone.
It's a learning curve. So we're doing it live. And there are gonna be mistakes. But don't put us to the fire pit. We're mm-hmm. still learning, and we will constantly continue to learn.
Yes.
And we're already frustrated without the help of any outside individuals. We're frustrated and anxious, and we all understand that we have to control our level of anxiety so that we don't make your kids anxious. But whatever you fill your child's head with about masks and about remote learning, that will be the reality, even if they haven't tried it. And I had students in the spring, because I asked them, because I made them do a Flipgrid and tell me what they thought about online learning. Some of them really said, I don't like the drama of school. And so I like to be able to go at a time that I want to, and then I can email you and we could get on Teams and talk about random stuff. But then also I can get the help. I feel like I have you all to myself.
Mm. So please, first of all, they said the drama of school, but...
Right. And I get it, because the truth is that I can remember being a 15-year-old school, and we ain't have cell phones either. Your whole life changed from class period to class period. You could have a boo at first and be broken up by second. So I get that piece when they start to have those conversations. Mm-hmm. So it's just a lot that's going to happen. And I will not have social distancing happening in my course when schools come back. I have a max of 25 kids in my class. I have 25 chairs. There's no social distancing happening there. I can't do it. But they said that's why they have them wear masks. That's the only reason why.
Yeah, and you said it's at 25%. And that's how many students still? You're not going to be
it depends.
At 25, but still.
The truth is, it depends. I might have 25 A through L kids.
With that said, though, so talking about the anxiety and fears, what are your fears or your concerns as it relates to your own health, though? Like, we're talking about you as a teacher, Bridget the friend, Bridget the woman. Like, you got your own concerns and you have your own health. So talk about that.
So the fact that there are no accommodations, like general accommodations, it feels like they're only making accommodations based on ADA, which is what I was trying to get. And so I'm a cancer survivor. I had thyroid cancer last summer. And, but not only that, but my surgeons and they all said, oh, you don't qualify under ADA to have anything because technically you don't have cancer anymore. You're just taking a pill to suppress your immune system. That's really all you're doing. And then I contacted my primary care physician and she said, send over the paperwork and we'll look at it and fill it out. She said, I'm doing a whole lot, so I'm going to try to do it. She contacted me Sunday and she said, listen, you don't have to have something under ADA, although my mama disagrees from an HR standpoint. But in essence, now she didn't say it in this many words, but she basically said, baby, you big, you got high blood pressure, and you got asthma. She said, and I put in there that you have all of that, and that if you catch COVID, you may not survive. She said, so I recommended that you get to teach remote. I said, they're not offering that. It's not an option in my district. I said, so can you put in there that they can at least provide me with plexiglass for my desk to cover my desk? Because under ADA, you have to give me a reasonable accommodation, unless you just say no, but you try to find a reasonable accommodation. So we're going to see what happens next week when I submit this paperwork.
Girl, so I'm just sitting here like, you see me like on the forehead trying to calm myself down and I'm not even... So you have these risks. Your doctor is saying, hey, we're gonna do what we can to help you. And your district is like, look, honey, you're essential. So you bring your cell phone and put this mask on and get this hand sanitizer and teach our children. Mm-hmm. So what if you had to give your anxiety level a number right now on a scale of 0, no anxiety, to 10, top anxiety? Where are you?
It's on 10 with a vodka tonic.
Okay.
However, I will say that the other piece of me says, you know whose you are. And you're going to go in here because you don't have another job and the rent is due. And you're going to try to do your job to the best of your ability. So why am I going to stress about something I literally can't change? Like, it doesn't take away the anxiety, but it subsides it a little for me. Like, I have to put myself back there at that place and say, this is just what you have to do. And so I always think, you know, God gives you the tools, mm-hmm. and he gives you the measure. It doesn't necessarily come in the way you want it, but maybe it came in the fact that I was able to buy my own supplies. You know, I don't know.
And somebody said, I got you Kleenex. This is Tanisha Fisher said, I got you Kleenex and my brother is getting more for you.
Thank you, boo. Thank you. Because I don't want no sneezing or nothing. And I bought all I'm buying. Thank you, boo. But Rosalind said, like, so they provided you with the bell schedule and haven't extended the day for social distancing. They extended the day, but not for social distancing. They extended the day because they didn't want to extend the school year. And so they still want these kids to graduate in May. So all of the extra days, like they took away some of the PD days out of the schedule. They took away some of the off days of the students. So because they still want us to graduate that Friday before Memorial Day. So at the end of the day, everybody's going to figure out their employer and what their employer prioritizes over you, which is why I always tell people you pimp a job while you got it, mm-hmm. because they're pimping you. Get what you need and move on. So it's just a lot. There's so much. And now I'm in trainings. I'm back at school. We don't have children, but we started school Tuesday. And so I walk into my classroom and I'm just like, oh, I'm so sad. Because it's like, you see, for some people, they didn't go back to the classroom to clean up or anything at all. So you still see stuff from your students. And then I saw something from, I had a student that committed suicide.
Yeah, I saw that on your social media.
Yeah, that was tough. That was one of my sweeties. Now, when we're in class, this also brings up something else that teachers are concerned about with remote learning. I had him, he was a freshman. And I had him and he was so bright and bubbly at first. And then we started to see him kind of track down. But he always came in and was like, what's up, Miss B? How are you doing? I was like, I'm okay, baby. How are you? You know, we have that kind of rapport. But then I started to see him stop doing assignments when we were still in school. And then I thought maybe the information was difficult. I reached out to his parents and let them know, like, he's not where he used to be. He's skipping school and now he's in, you know, detention. Like, these are things that he wasn't doing in the fall. Mm-hmm. And then he started doing work right before we left and he was having a good time learning Photoshop and all of these other things we were working on. And then spring break happened and then COVID happened. And I think I got one assignment from him. And that was his Flipgrid video telling me how he was adjusting right now and what some of his favorite things were that we learned in class so that I could prepare the lessons to be on things that they already like to do. And then that was it. And he never submitted any more assignments. I would reach out to his parents. And one time they responded and said, I don't know why he's not doing anything because he's in there. And I was like, I don't know. And then nothing, heard no more comments from his parents, nothing from him. And then we got an email that this student committed suicide. And then I was already trying to pull myself out of my own little bit of depression from being from this new thing. Mm-hmm. And then to hear that, and I didn't know what to do.
That's what I'm like, and I'm just taking a deep breath because I'll break down and start crying. And just hearing it, like you said, that's so sad. And when you talked about the Flipgrid, what did he say? Were there clues, like, even in the Flipgrid? Did he say?
No, he sounded like he normally sounds. And he was like, hey, Miss B, you know, I like this, this, and that. He didn't answer all the other questions. He just answered like, what do you like to do? I remember we learned color theory and I kind of want to do that. He put an emoji up over his face instead of me seeing his face because they can do that. They have a right to do that. So he didn't, I didn't see his face. So I just saw like his head and, you know, he just talked like for 30 seconds and he was done. And that was it. So that is a fear that a lot of educators have is like, for those who are going remote only, I can't tell that. And then to watch on the news that some teachers saw parents get killed or something, I saw on the news, and the kid did like this because they heard gunshots. And the kid did this in the camera. And then,
oh my God.
That was just on the news yesterday, I believe.
And see, and this is the whole thing, because we know for sure child abuse cases. So I have a neighbor who, she's a therapist and she works for HPD and she goes out on calls and things. And so we do know that cases of child abuse have increased, spousal abuse. So all of these things that are going on in a home, and we can't say that that was going on in a child's home, but all these things definitely came to a head. And now our children are going to go back to the classroom with this. How do you really unpack that and process that? And then you show up at like day one, we back, we're back to school. So what would your day one be like knowing that we've done all this?
My day one is literally just conversation. Mm-mm, no, we're going to get to know each other. We're going to have these conversations. I'm going to let y'all chat because one, y'all ain't chatted in forever. Two, why are we learning this week? We don't have to. It's not even a normal week. Let's talk about how you feel. Let's talk about what this looks like. Let's talk about your summer if you want to share. Mm-hmm. But that's really all we're going to do all week, every day, because I need, and then help you become comfortable with wearing your mask, which is not really my job. I wish somebody would do it at home, but I got you for 48 minutes. And what we're not going to do in here is try to get each other sick. So now this becomes a pact that we're going to make with each other, that we are going to agree that we are going to try our best to not get each other sick. Because when you include children in the decision-making process, your classroom usually runs much better. But also when you let them talk, don't cut them off. Don't assume, because the first time I hear somebody say, you know, remote learning is awful. Who said that? I always ask anytime they say something negative. I can't do that. Who told you that? Who told you that? I'm gonna go beat them up. Who told you that? And then we start to talk and they say like, well, I never tried it. Well, then you don't know if you don't like it. You're going to try today. Mm-hmm. So I want to know where the message comes from, because then that becomes the framing of my own message to them. Because if they say, my mama said blah, 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 I don't go and say your mama wrong. I say, well, what do you say? Again, part of why I got in school is to try to get you to use your mind and use some critical thinking. What do you say? And that's what we're doing all week.
That's good. I love that. So like you said, so you're going to unpack that, because that's one of the things that stood out when we had our conversation beforehand, that you are vested in their, not even just their education, but like you said, their growth as people, which that comes with that social and emotional need, mm-hmm. and all of that kind of stuff. And then also you want them to be safe, everybody.
Yeah.
Real quick, let's do some comments. Donna Frazier said, practice at home is the key. My ninth grader has adjusted and packed his book bag with extra supplies. Where do the book bags go, though? Because, see, to me, that's like bringing from the door, from the bus, to the drop-off, to the hallway. Like, there's so many risks.
And we don't have lockers at our high school, so they don't have a choice but to have a backpack. But I'm trying my best to avoid. And it's probably going to drive them crazy, because I have some students who like to write on paper better than they like to do it online. But I'm going to tie in a piece of, I'm just preparing you for college. Okay. Because I don't want a whole lot of paper around and passing and people touching and things like that. That's spreading germs. I don't really want that. The only students I probably would let would be my students who maybe have accommodations. Okay. And they want to do that. But now I've dropped that down to like three kids. instead of like 25. And I may be okay with that. But sometimes they want to do it and write all their answers on paper and then they'll type them in. But I'll give them time to do that. So I'm trying to stop all of that. But my focus, and this is just what I plan to do, is that I'm going to have all my students on online because they are not allowing us to have online class separate from a face-to-face class. And they're wanting our online, our remote kids to log in at the time that our students, that our my face-to-face students meet. But they don't really understand what that looks like. And so I have to make it work for me. So that means everybody's going to have to see everything at the same time. We're going to all be online. You can, you, even though you're in my classroom, you can chat and talk in the text box while we lecture. And then we record it and then we're done. Everybody got it. Everybody can remember. Because what I cannot do is talk to a bunch of kids and turn my back to some kids on the wall.
Yes.
I can't do that. Everybody wants to see my face at the same time. And the only way to do that is to sit right here, look in this screen and crack jokes and do all the other stuff with y'all while we learn. I have no choice. And that's the way I'm implementing it. They said they were giving us creative control, but these are some things we had to do. Well, mm-hmm. that's what I'm doing. So good luck.
Good luck. So your curriculum, what I'm hearing is your curriculum has changed in your style.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just a little bit.
They're still learning. So yeah. Shia Swift says the counties that open in Georgia failed. Few kids with masks and no social distancing.
I saw that on the news and they shut them down. And my other issue is what they're saying in Texas about, if you haven't heard, defines coming in contact with COVID. So if Johnny is social distance 6 feet in a corner and he don't have his mask on, but I have my mask on, if he catches COVID, I have not been exposed.
Okay, so
let that's me what help, the state says.
Let me help them out from, this is my voice nerd, right? And so the articles have come out with the voice and talking about aerosols and droplets in the air and how they're just out there floating in the air. And you're talking about plexiglass. We don't even know if that plexiglass is going to help. It'll help you for spray, you know, that kind of thing. But if it's out here floating in the air, I don't even know what they're talking about. They better go read the research. But anyway.
But now you're talking science and science versus politics.
And this thing. So would you say that is it politics that's driving this little ship?
Let's call it societal pressures.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely. Which is why I knew mine was going back. I knew they were going back. I knew they were going back. And so, but in the same breath, I sat and listened to that long call and listened to them say, I listened to the science, the medical experts say, you've got a social distance. And then I also heard a board member say, well, at the high school level, we just can't. Well, then y'all don't need to go. But one of those board members, he said, he asked the medical professionals, if we started school on August 19th, would you send your kids back? And they were like, nope, I wouldn't. But I might send them back on the 31st.
What? Stop it. What's the difference?
So they pushed it date back.
What about the kids? So when you're talking about social distancing and all of that stuff, as we get ready to shut this down, the conversation always goes so quickly. What about those kids who just decided they're going to act up? Because like you said, some they're just going to be kids. What happens when a kid coughs into somebody's kid's face on purpose? How do you handle that?
Well, one, you get up out my room. I'm about to hit this button. You know, we have emergency buttons like that usually people press if they have a kid's fighting and, you know, technically we can't break them up and all kinds of stuff. You're going to have to get out of here. And so, again, setting the expectation of what it's going to look like in that classroom. You can act a whole fool. Now, but I deal with high school kids. That's something totally different. So I don't think I'm going to struggle too much with juniors and seniors, but those freshmen are just overgrown eighth graders. So we're going to have a conversation about what that looks like. And that's why teachers have visuals all over the room, not necessarily just to make it colorful, just so as reminders of the rules that we put in place, the pact that we made in this course, in this classroom, what we do. But they did tell us that for students who come into school who do not have a mask on, they will give them a mask. Okay. If they are in your classroom and they choose to take that mask off, you send them to the office. They will either give them another mask or they go into a holding place waiting on their parents to come get them. If they do it a third time, you have to go remote. You cannot come back in this school. So anybody who's bold enough to think, so I want to see if they're going to really do it. Mm-hmm. But looking at Tanisha's comment.
Yes.
Those the kids that are our special needs kids are probably the primary ones that really do need to come to school. Nothing on there is going digital. It's not going to help them at all because a lot of them need, as Tanisha said, they need therapies, and those therapies are hands on. And I've watched the news where they said that some of their children have lost some gain that they'd gotten when the schools close, and my heart goes out to them because that is something that you need help with, because one, you're just not versed in it. You didn't learn that.
Yeah.
You know, and you need those experts. And so, but in those rooms at my high school, they never had 25 kids because there's so much attention that needs to be given. So they usually have about 5, maybe 10, but the rooms are large. And so they can technically social distance in there.
Yeah. Nisha said, what did she say? She had 8 kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's with 8 kids.
Mm-hmm.
But you're talking 25 in your class.
I'm on 25.
Bridget, thank you for having this conversation with me to talk about teachers. Because you're right. Teachers have been just almost like you guys have been in the middle of this, but you haven't had a voice. And I wanted you to have a voice, but first of all, tell them, how can they find you if they want to keep the conversation going with you really quickly?
So if you want to find me, I should have put it up there. My IG is bits.in.bytes. That's my blog, but that's my social media page for my blog, Bits and Bytes. But also if you just want to hit me, you can, I'm Bridget Wilkins on Facebook, and you can always send me something over there.
Yes. Oh, real quick. Rocky Rose said, did all 25 sign up for face-to-face?
We haven't been given access to our course rosters yet to find out who is virtual and who's not. However, in one of my courses, I do so far because I have to email them prior to time to find out if they have a job. Two of those 11 in one of my classes are working, but they are going remote.
Mm. And then really quickly, before I get your closing thoughts on all of this, is there a protocol for in case of like contraction, just like you said, in general, like does the whole school shut down and they clean the school? What did they tell y'all? Because it's bound to happen.
So it sounds like it's going section by section. So if the kids were primarily, if a kid catches COVID and they were in my classroom, they're going to shut my classroom down, but the school's not going to close. And we've been asking them, how many kids does it take to shut the school down? And they haven't given us an answer because the district hasn't given them an answer. But put it like this, it's not shutting down for 3 kids. They're going to shut down that area. They're going to just shut down that area of the school.
Expectation, look at me, I'm like, okay, expectation versus reality. All it takes is one and then the whole school is on fire with the COVID.
But if they didn't get tested, they don't have it.
Whew. Well, bless you, extending our hands to you. Now, as we get ready to close out, tell me something like a message to fellow teachers. In terms of them with their anxieties, their fears, going back to the classroom, being successful, what have you, whatever is on your heart to share that, like you said, that the world is not saying or realizing and the media is not discussing. What would you say to your fellow teachers?
I would say, I feel your pain. This is not a fair situation. I don't think you should quit. I don't think you should retire and get out of teaching because your heart you have the heart of a teacher. You have a heart of an educator, which really means that regardless of the level of anxiety that you have, and I know you have it because you don't want to bring this home to your family. You don't want to die, even if it's just you and you're single. But I know that if it was a perfect world, you want to be in the classroom, but you shouldn't have to die to live out your passion. You just shouldn't. And so we in this thing together, and I wish you well. Buy your own stuff. Rely on you for your own safety. And if you can get an ADA accommodation, even if they tell they deny it, at least have it on record that you tried. Because we could all bring some stuff later on in life. And I'm not trying to do that, but what I'm saying is at this point in the game, you fight for yourself. And if that means you have to leave the profession, you do what's best for you. But if you in the trenches like me, because listen, bills have to be paid, I'm in there with you. Mask up, stay safe. I wish you well.
That's a perfect way to close. And I'm doing this. This is the church. I got to get my angle right, but I'm extending my hands toward you. Thank you. As a link for all of the teachers out there that are involved. And like you said, and you feel like you're doing your job, everything that you said, we stand with you. My prayer is that you're covered and you're protected, that God encamps his angels all around you, that when you start this year, that his will be done in this. And no matter what politics say and administrators, that his will be done in this situation, and that he rules and he reigns, and that you walk in your authority in this situation.
Amen.
Sending you love from the Speak It family. And as you all go out, make sure you share this podcast. If you have a teacher in your family, show them some love, send them some supplies, send them some PPE. And Amy said this was a great conversation. And just share this Speak It conversation. We're one conversation away, you know, from connecting. We're one conversation away from our purpose. And if we stay quiet and we don't use our voice, we hinder other people. And in order for us to grow together, come together and build the way we need to build, it is imperative that we speak it. And with that said, good night.
Good night.